9.0 corporate services, we have nothing there today. 10.0 engineering works, we have nothing today. Under 11.0 finance, we do have 11.1 adoption of audited 2018-19 financial statements, and I've asked our director of finance. Yes, if you would.
I'm still talking with Kimberly, sorry.
So we have Jennifer Keating Hughley, our director of finance, at the presentation desk. Who would like to take the lead on the recommendation of this from Deputy Mayor Kelly?
I recommend that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality adopt the audited financial statements and the trust fund financial statements for the fiscal year ended March 31st, 2019, as presented by Grant Thornton.
Seconded for that? Council News. Jennifer, would you like to give us an update? Anything in particular you want to mention?
I would like to thank all my finance staff for the great work that they have done during this audit. They were always available and always amiable, and we got along really well with the auditors when they were here. There wasn't any information that we were able to provide to them on the spot. So I think the audit, all in all, went extremely well and smooth. So I'm very pleased with that.
Thank you, Jennifer. Any questions or comments of councilors? Councilor Fancy?
I'd like in particular, Jennifer, I know I have to pick all those small little things because it's a great big picture, but the tax sales, how they came about this year and how you've gone about aggressively every year, but this year in particular, how you even brought us, I think, out of the red on one of the, as they call it again, the variables.
Those FCIs.
Yeah, so that's been fantastic. I appreciate that.
We actually managed to pull ourselves out of the red last year. We were yellow.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but this year I expect that we should be green. We'll see. They moved the mark.
Yes.
They moved the mark. We may still be yellow, but yellow is fine. It's not red. And we brought it down, of course, from 15.4%. We were at 15.4 and 15.1. We had a 12.5 one year, and I expect my projections for our March 2019 year end to be 8.3.
Wow.
So last year we were at 10.6. So if we keep moving at 2% per year, yeah, we'll have her down in a very reasonable range shortly.
What did they move the goalposts
to? They've been moving the calculations and the goals periodically throughout this, but the goal on that one specifically has been 10%. So 10%. To be under 10%,
yeah.
Which we were last, we should be this year.
Yeah.
Last year it was,
10.5,
we were 10 point,
actually.
Yeah, I think we were 10.1 and the goal was 10.5 or something to that effect, but we were,
it was 10.
We were comparative for rural,
yeah.
Which left us yellow. So it wasn't red
right. Last
year.
But for 8.3, then
we should be well
in
the green.
That far. Gosh, everyone else would go back in the red.
Yeah, exactly. We should be well in the green this year.
Yeah. No, well done and great job. And I know that Region of Queens is the envy of a lot of municipalities and our financial stability. And I know that's a lot down to you and your staff. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Heather.
Any other councilor? Councilor Fisk?
All I can say, Jennifer, is great job. Thank you very much for all your efforts and everything you've done.
Any other councilors? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. Mention to Steve, Burns, if you would, that we'll need him shortly. We have nothing under 12.0 recreation and community facilities, nothing today under 13.0 planning, under 14.0 reports. We have 14.1 petition, Old Falls Road request for cul-de-sac. And CAO, did you want to get the briefing on this?
Sure. So back previously, council was provided with a petition from local residents of Old Falls Road, Liverpool, requesting that the street become a cul-de-sac. And so the our rules of order require that the staff reply in public or present a table of public report in 45 days, which would have been done last week when this report was presented in the council back and made available to the public. And so based on the request, staff have costed out what the cost would be to a cul-de-sac in several different locations based on the lay of the land and based on the current traffic patterns and traffic standards, main traffic safety standards for across Canada that we follow. So in your package, you'll see that there are five options presented. And then there is some commentary about one option that was considered at the very bottom of the road because of safety concerns at the very end in the other options section. So all of the proposals came in at a costing of about $120,000. And so the first couple of proposals at the top of the hill before you get to the incline, there's significant shale rock there. So that would be a significant cost to remove that rock, and that's why the cost is high there. Versus on the other side of that hill, I think it's like an 8-foot drop, so it would cost a significant amount of infill material to bring that up. So at the end of the day, when all the calculations were done, it's about $120,000, $130,000 for either option, based on the lay of the land that's there, prior to any land acquisition costs that might be there. And so as the member of the public asked about no recommendation, there is no recommendation. This is simply a report from that was brought forth by petition. It wasn't a request of council, so that's why there's no recommendation. It's simply a report for council's consideration. If council wishes to move forward with any particular option, then that would be costed out more accurately, more diligently, with the final designs being completed. And there is some at the end. The conclusion does indicate what the cost would be. And because roads are costed in our formula, 75% to residents of Liverpool and 25% to residents of District 1 12 inside Liverpool, the costing shows what the cost would be on the air rate for 1 year. If this was implemented 1 year's time, as opposed to being paid for over several years, it shows what the cost would be to those residents to prevent the cul-de-sac in place. And so with that, I will leave it at that and do my best to answer any questions that councilors may have.
Any questions or comments of councilors on this item? Councilor McLeod.
Chris, a cul-de-sac, is it really necessary to design a cul-de-sac? Why not just have it no exit or that at the bottom of the street that is adjacent to number 8 highway? Why do we have to go with a cul-de-sac?
We don't. That was a petition, so that's what's been... That's the report and designed by council. We were not asked to do a report on a dead-end street.
Dead-end street.
So that's why there's no commentary in here about dead-end street.
Because the cost is rather high. I don't really think it's necessary that we should go to that expense for a cul-de-sac. So if there were other options, the request was for a cul-de-sac, correct?
That was the petition.
Okay. That was the petition. So if that was not approved, then could a report be prepared for no exit?
That was council's wish, absolutely.
Because if it was a no exit and the plows could still turn and come back, and that would be the only consideration would be the winter maintenance.
Well, actually wouldn't, because what would probably happen is if we wanted a dead-end street, we would probably go to the last house, and we would put a barricade up there, and that would be the end of the dead-end street, and then we would remove the rest of the street that goes down to Milton Road, and then the plow would just come to the end of the street and plow the snow over top of the barricade or whatever was there. The other issue would be parking for trucks, or for turning around for trucks, so the plow would have to obviously back up somewhere, but then any big trucks that would be on there would have to back up in people's driveways.
Why end it there? Why not end it down the bottom?
Because it wouldn't be safe. Because if somebody came, if you look at the report in the other option at the very end, it's a very narrow, sharp corner, and if people were to go down to the bottom and decide they want to turn around, going back up that hill, eventually there's probably going to be a head-on collision, because cars are very narrow, and cars would come up over the hill one way, and cars would come up over the hill the other way, and there'd be a head-on collision.
But once the sign is posted, the public will be alerted, and there won't be as much traffic. I mean, it's usually used for local people to exit out onto number 8. They'll still get the message that it's a dead-end street, and then less likely would they would use it.
But there's lots of people that don't live on that street that use that street as well, and if they don't necessarily see the sign, if there's leaves growing over it, if they're not paying attention, and they go down the street, they get to the end, realize it's a dead end, and turn around, and somebody locally on the street, or somebody else is coming on the street, there's a risk for that. So that's why staff aren't recommending that as part of the cul-de-sac, because that is a very dangerous situation. Only take one accident or head-on collision at the top of that hill. The only way to solve that would be to widen that street out. And then that would be more of an option that staff could look at. So you widen that street out, then if there was a dead end at the end, then people could have two-way traffic going up and down.
Can I continue? The cul-de-sac, then why position it on the top? On the top of the crest of the hill, why not bring the cul-de-sac down below where close to number 8?
Same reason. That if the cul-de-sac is there, you're going to have traffic at the bottom that are going to go in the cul-de-sac and back up the hill, and they're going to potentially crash into a car that's going the other way over the hill. The hill is very narrow. The whole road is very narrow. And so if somebody's coming up the hill, they're accelerating. If they're coming up the hill on the other side, they're accelerating. You can't see over the hill. And so there will be a potential, there is a high risk of potential for a head-on collision right there.
Councilor Fairley?
So we've spent a lot of time on this. Councilor Fancy has spent a lot of time. And I've learned from now that we have this petition, and that's what we're focusing on, is there anything that staff know of that will solve this problem that we may not be asking? Is there a solution for this that you can think of that may solve the issues of speeding? And it doesn't have to be a solution set in stone, but are there recommendations that we could do that would solve the problem in staff's opinion?
If the issue is speeding, then that's an enforcement issue, not a road design issue.
Right.
And so if the issue is enforcement, then that requires some assessment by the RCMP to see if it's actually truthful or not. We do know from the previous report that some assessment was done a number of years ago, and there was no speeding on the road. It just looks like it's speeding because it's a very narrow road.
Right.
But according to the standards of 50 kilometers an hour, it seems fast for that road, but that's the rules of the law until the provincial government changes that.
Absolutely.
And so it may seem fast, but the RCMP still can't ticket somebody if they go on 45 on that road, although the residents probably feel it very fast. And so if speeding is the issue, I'm not sure what the issue is yet. We've gone through quite a few scenarios here, of course.
Yeah.
But if speeding is an issue, that's an enforcement issue, not a road design issue. And so that becomes a discussion with the RCMP about what the options are for the RCMP to more closely monitor it, do some speed testing to see if there is actually speeding on the road, and then do an issue ticket.
Doesn't that seem like the likely first step before we go through all of this? Because when we were talking about the three-way stop in Main Street, that was the end motion, was to have RCMP enforce it. So we went through 9 different scenarios, and it came down to the RCMP. Why is this different? Why wouldn't we use the same strategy that we're using for the Main Street?
Staff just prepared reports that they were asked.
I understand that, but it's also taking a lot of time when sometimes common sense should play into it, and just start at the the things that we can control or monitor. How would we get that done? What's the next step to get that done that may please people on the street?
Well, if
is that a motion? Is that a motion?
Probably not a motion, because it would be out of order anyway.
No, I know.
But no, sir, I would assume it would be out of order. I don't want
not
to
today.
Assert that in any other jurisdiction. But I would, if that's the direction, if speeding is the issue, then council should give direction to staff to consult with the RCMP to do some assessment of the road to see if there actually is speeding on the road and what avenues can be taken to lessen the amount.
But it's, I mean, we're not guessing here. This is what they all came to council, you know, they sat in the gallery and said it was all about speeding. That's the issue. If there was nothing other than speeding, we wouldn't be talking about this.
Well, I guess a cul-de-sac doesn't stop speeding.
No, I.
And so?
I totally understand. But if there's some more RCMP presence over there and they feel like, you know, they're actually addressing the issue, and you're right, you're absolutely right. They can't fine you for going 51 up there. But maybe some warnings or some education about using them. I don't know, but I'm just, there's got to be an easier way than doing report after report after report, and now we've got another request for another report. And it's all about speeding.
So if I may, Councillor Crill, I'd like to ask the CAO to respond to the fact that this is not the first time that speeding on Old Falls Road has come before the Region of Queens or Council. Have there been assessments in the past on whether there's speeding there when it was raised as a potential concern in the past?
Well, the only one I mentioned a minute ago was the report that was done by Kelly Ann and myself a number of years ago.
What year?
Probably 10 years ago, 12 years ago. It's quite a while ago. But I don't think the traffic has increased a lot. I think there's different times a day.
Let's never assume that. That was within the Bowater days.
That's right. And so the Bowater days is gone, but there's still similar. There's more traffic there from other sources, not from Bowater.
But you also have much more infrastructure at that corner than we had 10 years ago. You know, you've added stores, you've added,
true,
you know, everything there in St. Martin's. And so
the only assessment that we made of that was done back then, where we actually sat there for a whole day and did radar and checked speed of people and the number of the traffic and the time of day. And so whether the RCMP are able to do that again, I'm not sure, but that would be the discussion. If speeding is the issue, that would be the discussion to have. And if there's some way to determine what the speeding is, now I know TIR for road counts does have things in a box that we use for road counts. We could eventually borrow one from them to use for that to determine how many cars are there, but you have to do it stealthily because you don't want to put it there and then people just go up and down to make the numbers go a little skewed.
Just one last thing. Is this not the classic case for having a speed radar on the street? One of the temporary ones that would just start everything in motion?
The RCMP have the mobile trailer, as we understand. They could set that up on that road and it could, of course, register the speeds.
With the report afterwards. Okay, I'm done.
Councilor Fancy.
Okay, there's a few things, and it may be, again, when people bring forth a petition, it isn't always what the petition says, is that they're saying they feel there's a situation there that they want to address. So when you can get everybody to sign a petition, except for two people who didn't sign it, one person was in the hospital, and the other person doesn't even live there at his house anymore, he did. Some of the family is staying there right now, and I think it's going to potentially sold the places. So the gist of it is that everybody who was around signed it. So they were interested, they're concerned of this, and this is going on for years. And maybe, again, maybe it wasn't the best approach or whatever. And again, there was a letter issued saying that I wanted the cul-de-sac. I didn't want the cul-de-sac. It's a matter of this is what the people wanted. When the last report came out, they didn't think the report addressed what they wanted. So they wanted it. So it isn't like we're trying to get a report after report after report to try to keep going on with this forever. I believe in a lot of times reports don't, in a lot of ways it doesn't, the reports don't have to happen. I think we need more communication of us talking and trying to find out what we can do. Maybe it's us going to our CAO and being able to resolve some of these things, because it's taken up a lot of time doing these reports. I didn't actually want to report for any of this, but it maybe it's the way I came across, maybe it's the way, maybe it's a learning process or whatever, but I think communications, we can resolve a lot of things and be able to understand than going through reports. Now, one thing about the cul-de-sac, I know they wanted to know if they could put a cul-de-sac down the bottom of the road. They didn't want all these other ones, so it became a lot more cumbersome to write up all these, to do all these cost assessments for all these places that cul-de-sac could be. But I knew right away when Bob Quinn would see that this was going to come up on his land, he was going to be an unhappy camper, knowing that somebody could be putting a cul-de-sac on the land, but he didn't want that. Because when I originally talked about it and putting it down the bottom, he thought, you know, maybe that's a possibility. But when he started talking up on his land, that wasn't going to happen. So it just all we ended up doing is making him somewhat angry. I was talking with him last night. He's good with these things. So when we look at these things, is how can we go about stopping maybe pushing reports off to our CAO and be able to... Now, with that being said, that report is there, so nobody will have to ask for it in the future because it's already been costed out, so it won't happen. The concern was, even as Councilman McLeod said, is you put an exit down to the bottom that right at the very bottom, that somebody could come down to the exit and have to turn back. So that way you get a double flow of traffic, and it's dangerous coming up that hill. But I will say it's no more dangerous than that sharp turn down below. When somebody's coming around the turn, somebody's going on the inside and outside, you can't see the other side. That's worse, yeah. So we've got, you know, got different dangerous situations on that hill. There's been a lot of bushes cut back. I measured the other day there, the center of the road, to one little pile of bushes is about 13, 14 feet. I think that would still, if we wanted to look at it and say, hey, we want to address that, or there's one big tree right on the corner that could be addressed, because that's less than 15 feet in the center of the road, which in turn, you know, if a person wanted to push that, you could do it, because you'd still be within the ruts with the roadway. But we don't want to do those type of things. But what I look at is a two-part here. It's you don't really say the speed of the traffic, because they're still going within 50 kilometers an hour. It's like, as Councillor Kelly said, coming down there by the tennis court, if they're coming 50 kilometers an hour, they're coming way too fast. You know, somebody could get hurt. So it isn't a matter of 50 kilometers an hour. It's got to be to the road conditions which are there, which is less than 15 feet wide, trying to meet two people coming around a sharp turn and people walking, and there's no sidewalks. So you're really in a bad situation there. You've got, so it's the speed of the traffic, but also to the volume of the traffic at times. Now, as we talked about having an assessment done 10 years ago, or 15 years ago, we've got to look at with Queen's Place there, and the events that's taken place, the things that where people come out in one large volume, which is causing a lot of the grief at this particular time. And as we see Aquilitis building up and seeing more people, it's going to be more and more flow through there, a lot of ways it's a shortcut, and that's the problem. That becomes the thing in a lot of ways in a nutshell. Because people want to avoid the lights, they want to go around that way, and if you think whether they're going to make up the time, it's the same distance up there, and the lights and up, as it would be pretty well to come up there, but you get the volume of traffic, so you're going around there, and that's where I'm hearing most of the people. They're not maybe bringing it here, but they're bringing it to me. But there, it's people coming up there too fast, and trying to get around the lights. So we've looked at a lot of scenarios, and every scenario had the same thing, is that if you come down over the hill and if you have to come back up over the hill, it can create a hazardous situation coming up over the hill. The one thing that I talked with our CAO yesterday again about, and just to bringing it back again from the original report, that I'd be willing at least to take it back to the people who live on the road, is to be able to post a sign. And that's all we do, is that you put a sign on the front before you're going down Old Falls Road. So it gives, again, we had that situation where that big sign says Caledonia and Kedgy this way, and right after it is that road. And for some reason, people can't understand, some people will not understand that if you've got to go up to the lights to cut that way, they will come up through that way. is to have a big sign that says, saying something like, no right turn between 4 p.m. and 8 a.m. on the, you know, I'm just ad libbing right now, because that's not good, I can't put a motion in today anyway, is to, where it goes on to Highway 8, have that posted there, and have it posted down by the other end, where it goes on Highway 8. So that way, anybody getting off 4 o'clock isn't going to take a shortcut through there to beat the traffic. You aren't going to have events or anything that goes up through there that would, if they come down to that end and they go to Highway 8, it's going to say after 4 p.m. and before 8 a.m., you could only turn left going back to Liverpool. If you do that, people aren't going to turn, if they say, oh no, I got down here and I made a mistake, they can still go to Liverpool. They won't have to back up that road, so you create that two-way traffic. It takes away the two-way traffic, you can still go over towards Liverpool. And say, well, where could they turn? They could turn anywhere. Probably some of them turn up there by Dave Hat's garage or cars and things, but probably Dave would like that, because everybody would look at his cars when they get there. But anyway, it's the whole idea. That way, that would work. It would cut down your flow of traffic and your speeding. And the speeding is mostly generated by that people trying to avoid light. And whether it be, it could be even 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but still you're going, you're up to 4, they can still go straight through. But after 4 and before 8 a.m., you could only turn left coming back into town.
But why would you want to eliminate the right-hand turn at the end of the road? Why don't you consider a sign on Old Falls Road, no throughfare from 4 p.m. to 8 a.m., and put it at that, so that then people aren't using it, because you are not going to eliminate traffic if they still go up and turn left to come back towards Liverpool.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You're going to have something on the front before you even go into the road. So then also people will understand this isn't the road to be going down to go into Caledonia. So it helps eliminate that. Whatever the wording is, it says no throughfare between four. It could be that wording. It's the meaning of what you're trying to get. They're saying that after 4 p.m. and before 8 a.m., you cannot go through. Maybe no throughfare sounds better because it's shorter. You don't have to have a whole bunch of reading when you have to make your cut in. And that way, you eliminate people wanting to get down there and say, "Oh no, I made the wrong decision to get there and have to turn around and come back up." They can at least come back from towards Liverpool. And there's going to be some people who are going to say, "I made a mistake," and they'll turn right anyway and go. But for a lot, I'm hoping there's a lot of them who would say, "I made a mistake. I'm not going to do that again because I didn't notice that sign."
Thank you, Councillor Fancy. Appreciate it. CAO has been making a few notes, as I have as well. Any other councillor have a comment or a question on this issue? Councillor McLeod?
Regarding Councillor Fancy's suggestion about a sign, no left turn, can that be enforced?
I don't know.
What else? You say no right turn?
Yeah, no right turn.
Sorry, no right turn.
I would suggest it wouldn't be. Highway signs is for safety purposes.
Okay.
And that sign would not be for safety purposes. It would be for punitive purposes to restrict access to people turning right as to keep them from going around. And so it's not a safety issue. It's actually, you're going to force them actually to go back into traffic, which is more of a safety issue than it would be if they turned right and went to Milton. And so I would suggest the RCMP would refuse to enforce that because it's not a safety issue. It's a punitive issue.
Aren't we talking safety on that street?
The turn is not safety. We're talking
the
safety.
The purpose of it would be safety.
But telling people they can't turn right on the Milton, which is the safest way to turn, would not be a safety issue. It would be contrary to safety issue. Because you're forcing them to turn left into traffic. As opposed to just turn right and keep going.
So the one on Main Street, then, that says no left turn into the parking spots for the post office, is that enforceable?
It's enforceable, yes.
Because that is a safety issue.
It is a safety issue. Just people are turning actually back, reversing towards traffic.
Okay.
Counselor, a question or comment? Counselor Fancy?
I go back to that. I think it's the best way. Enforceable or not enforceable, I think it would be, it would, people don't know. And people will, a lot of, I used to say down at the mill, the audit court will say no, but we all grew up that way. Well, it'll keep, it'll cut down the flow of traffic. If you can cut that flow down, if you can cut the speeding down, I think it does both factors, and not much cost to put a sign up. And we still don't know. We say if we can be able to talk to the RCMP, they may still make that enforceable.
And just back to my original point, if the issue is speeding, putting a no right turn, left turn isn't helping with speeding. It's only controlling the number of traffic, the volume of traffic. So that's not going to do with speeding. If speeding is an issue, speeding will probably still be an issue. It will only be why they're turning at the end of the road.
Well, but I disagree with that because I believe that part of the speeding is because they're trying to avoid the light. And if you can stop and go through there, you're going to slow down a lot of speeding.
And I understand your position, Councilor Fancy. The question would the traffic authority allow that sign to say only a left turn on Route 8? And that is a decision that we would have to proceed through them to find out. But there may be an alternate ability to put a sign up, no through traffic after this period of time.
Yes.
In the day. So this is something that can be discussed further prior to certainly a recommendation coming to council on this issue.
Yes,
Councilor Fraley?
Just kind of baffled. Is this not exactly what you asked for in day one?
And it was.
And
said
how long ago was that?
That was in the first report that I asked for that, and it was said no to, so that's why it was part of the.
So how can we say yes to it now? What's changed?
We're not saying yes to it now. We're saying
no. But how can we then? Can't we just go back to that report and look at that and say, well, here's the reasons why we said no to that?
What was he asked before?
Councilor Fancy asked for a sign at the end of Old Falls Road.
That said local traffic only, which we said was illegal, which wasn't appropriate. That's not what he asked me today.
But I also asked for the other one.
Yeah. Again, we go back to, we've got to stop just taking that one ask and say, here are other options. Because here we are, and as he feels like a year or two later, and we're back to a sign that probably won't get passed again. So if there's an option out there, up with the sign, maybe that wasn't the right ask. Here's one that may work. We could have avoided all of this, all of it, if we would have said, here's what staff feels would be appropriate sign. Not here's all the reasons why this sign's not going to work. And we could have avoided all those.
Well, there have been a number of reports, Councilor Frederick, as you well understand. We are dealing with a petition request today. We're not dealing
But why did the petition come? The petition came because we weren't willing to come up with something when Councilor Fancy first asked. We just said no because this sign wasn't appropriate. But apparently, there is a sign that may be more appropriate, no thoroughfare, which would have been so simple had we just said no thoroughfare would work. End of story. And now we're at the point where everybody on the street's doing petitions and we're talking about all of this for months and months and months. I don't understand it.
Nothing has changed. The issue is you're going to put a sign up that isn't enforceable and the traffic authority may say no to that. We haven't said that this was acceptable.
No, but you're talking about it again. So if we would have talked about it from the original day request, maybe we could have come up with a compromise that would have pleased the people on the street, Councillor Fancy, and the RCP and the traffic authority.
But at the time, the report said that the local traffic only sign wasn't appropriate according to the Motor Safety Act, the Motor Vehicle Act of Nova Scotia, and it wasn't recommended. Didn't prevent council from disagreeing with the recommendation and saying and deferring it or referring it to the traffic authority for an opinion and decision whether they want to do that. That's council's prerogative, not staff's prerogative. The same as this: if council wishes to move forward with a sign, then council then makes that decision and asks that staff to refer to the RCMP or the traffic authority for an opinion. whether they would authorize that sign or not. If they don't authorize the sign, then it's a moot point.
So let's not narrow it down to, do you approve one sign? Is there an appropriate sign that would work in lieu of? And that's what we asked the traffic authority. Because if you ask for one thing, we're going to go through this whole thing for the next term and the next term, because it's been on the books since Bowater days. It seriously has, so it has to end at some point.
Councilor McLeod?
I echo Councilor Pellick's comments, and I think if there's a request such as this petition that specifically talked about one specific solution, and that was to the point where it's not within our means to approve that solution, then I think staff should work with these people to find out these are other options that you can work with. Like, rather than just say that's what they asked for, they didn't ask for this, they asked for this. But if there's in staff's knowledge of these certain issues, then there should be, yeah, but that won't work, but this may, so let's talk about it, rather than just keep coming back with other reports. And the reports are either shot down or not, you know, not appropriate. So I think if we go through, and the council and staff themselves work with the public, and if the public has an issue, come before us and have a suggestion, although they don't know what all the possible solutions are, then we could work with them and say, this may not work, but this could. So keep the dialogue going rather than just cut off one solution and say, okay, we're back to square one again.
And I understand where you're going, Councilor McLeod. There have been a number of reports in the last 6 months on Old Falls Road. Many solutions proposed in those to many of the issues, but not total solutions. The petition arrived in the middle of that while we were deferring decisions on some of those reports. So what I'm hearing today is that the cul-de-sac creates problems on the Blind Hill. It has a cost. It has some residents that are not willing to provide their land. It is not deemed a really good solution to the issues that are facing the residents at this point. So we're fleshing out potential concerns and solutions. And I can only tell you that our CAO and staff can reach out to the RCMP and they can reach out to the Traffic Authority to see what the validity of the signage change on that road would be and what it means and whether it's enforceable. And we can't do that or provide that information today because we don't have it. But it is a path forward. And of course, Councilor Fancy is the council dealing directly with the residents. And I think he's expressed today their concerns and what he's seeing involved in this issue. So we can work together on this and see if we can get into a closure that works for everybody. It may be difficult, but that's the option that has appeared in front of us today. And I have Deputy Mayor Kelly next to Councilor Fancy. Okay. Deputy Mayor Kelly?
Just remind me then about all these reports. Are any of them from the Traffic Authority? So we currently don't have a report from an expert in traffic that deals with this kind of thing all the time that would tell us what, if any, is the possible solution to that road.
And that would be correct, but he wouldn't be an expert. He's new into this position. He's been doing it for about 6 months without any training, so his opinion would be based on consulting with other people, probably.
Consulting
well,
with the provincial traffic authority, probably.
Well,
who is an expert?
If he ever returns his call, probably, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is, we have a traffic authority, and we have provincial traffic authorities, and here we are as a council and staff trying to come up with a solution to something that we shouldn't be doing. We should be relying on our traffic authority and through their channels and whatever else to tell us how to best solve, if there is a solution. Because this probably isn't existing here and nowhere else in the entire province. We need to take expert advice on this to say what would you know, we could say have this on this on and then go to them and say, no, we can't do that. All right, then how about this? No, you can't do that. Why don't we just ask the person, the traffic authority, to tell us what's the best solution for this? I mean, I'm pretty sure taxpayers, and I'm not willing to agree to this much money to put a cul-de-sac in when it's not going to solve the problem 100%. I don't even think it's even going to get close. You know, I agree that a dead end is probably the best. Eventually, it'll probably get rid of the traffic on that street with a no exit sign off of Sandy Cove Road or Bristol, wherever it is at that point. There's no exit down that street, so nobody turns down it, no matter what. If there's a big no exit sign there, that it's going to get rid of the traffic on that street. But a cul-de-sac, or, I mean, in the beginning, whether it's a cul-de-sac or a dead end, it's going to create tons more traffic than there is now, because you don't even have them going up, and now you have to have them coming back again until it's finally local people figure it out. But then there's still people that come here to visit that are going to end up going down there, rightly or wrongly, because of the sign that's there or whatever it is. But if there's a no exit sign, then most people that are new to an area would recognize, if it's no exit, you don't turn down there. You know what I mean? You come to a new place and you see no exit, then you're not going to go down there unless you don't see it. But at the end of the day, I think that we need a report from a traffic authority telling us what would be the best recommendation or options in this case.
CAO, is there any comment?
Sure, just we need to identify what the problem is, because I thought I knew what the problem was, but today I don't understand what the problem is.
But don't we send it to the traffic store to say that the people on this street have a problem, and they're going to come back and say, yes, nobody's speeding on that street, there's nothing we can do about it. But we understand it's a narrow street, and that 50 kilometers an hour on that street does look like speeding. It is a dangerous zone, that street, because it is narrow, because it's through traffic, because of the blind corner and everything else. You know, I'm sure they'll come back with a recommendation and say, you know, even if it is, number one, the Region of Queens' responsibility is to make sure that, or the, whoever, the property owners or whoever they are, to keep those bushes cut back so that there's as much notice as possible coming around that corner. But also their recommendations to say that they come back and say, there's nothing that you can do on this street that's going to change anything from the way it is now, from one to the other. But why would we have to go and say, this is the problem? A traffic authority looks at something to say, we just say it's dangerous. This is a dangerous area. The people in the area are concerned. And what can you recommend to solve this issue? Is that not possible? We don't have to identify one thing to them so that they just look at one thing and give us a recommendation. Say, can you look at this street and let us know what are the possibilities to create a less dangerous situation on that street?
We can ask. I'm not optimistic you're going to get a useful report back, because I think they could come back and say, well, make it a one-way street and put a sidewalk in. They could say, cut all the trees down, widen the road. They could come back with all kinds of scenarios.
Yes.
That are way outside of the jurisdiction of what you want them to do. But you want to look at. And so we'll be back where we are now.
Well,
certainly, it's not going to hurt us to ask
the
question.
To me, there's no solution to this, and we just sort of agree right now to stop talking about it. Because
there might be a solution if
there's
you
no solution.
What the problem is, because I don't understand what the problem is yet.
Well, they say in their petition there's a problem with speeding. And now we know we can't do anything about that because people are not speeding. We understand that. Maybe that we've already proved that there people aren't speeding on that street. It's because it's 50 kilometers an hour. And 50 kilometers an hour down that street looks like speeding. But there's nothing you can do about it. You stop people going down that street, and then there's nobody speeding anywhere if they can't go down the street. If it's a no exit, then it's local traffic only. By default, it's local traffic only. Like just a no exit sign, but you have to stop people. Like, no, if they can get out the other end, then they're going to go out the other end, right? No exit on that street.
So at this point, we've run around in a full circle on this issue.
I mean,
and it's been before us a number of times.
Got it, got it.
So would we have consensus to ask our CAO to ask the traffic authority for his input on solutions potentially?
Well, I think at this point, the traffic authority has to chirp in at some point. And if we don't, if we don't have faith in our traffic authority that they can actually deal with these matters, I mean, the scope of a traffic authority, maybe we need to do something about that, but we have to be able, we're not experts in traffic and our staff aren't experts in traffic either. This is why we have a traffic authority. We need the traffic authority to tell us, to give us the recommendations.
And well understood, Deputy Mayor. I guess my question is to council, do we want to put a consensus forward that we have the CAO contact the traffic authority and ask for recommendations for solutions on the street?
I got one other small point along with that, though. They may be able to only give you the legalities of it, right? That say, I can do this.
Or
you can do this or you can't do that. Now, that's great to ask, but also, too, we need to know, if we could put up, like you say, no two or three, or maybe say, well, it's not enforceable, but you guys can. It's legal to put that up, but it's not something I would recommend because it's not enforceable. So we have to know both aspects of it.
We can add issues for them to consider when they're doing the traffic.
Right, that's what I just didn't want the question being said, is this legal or is this not legal or can we enforce this? And then we don't get all the answer what we need. So that's what I'm saying. Make sure we ask.
So I guess I would ask question, do we have consensus to have a request go to the traffic authority as discussed today? We do have consensus here. Thank you. So we have one item left before we go in camera, 14-2, event execution strategy. Steve Burns is here this morning now. I would ask Steve Burns, our events coordinator, to come forward and do the presentation under 14.2.
Had me all set up.
I do, but I have to take you out.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's great to be able to, in the public forum, to come out and be able to talk to you about events in Queens. And, you know, hopefully we can find some consensus, perhaps, and direction on how you'd like to move forward with an event strategy for the region of Queens. I know you obviously will keep the potential in mind of what everyone has accomplished with hard work and many businesses and organizations, and in particular our volunteers and event right holders, who have had what is an amazing 2019 to date in particular. And also we keep in mind our taxpayers who contribute to major events and events across the region of Queens. So just want to sort of set the scene, I guess, and sort of get a feel for what, we timed out. get a feel for four events and what's going on. It's actually, events are happening right now. And they're happening at Queens Place Amera Center. Today, 45 national women's team hopefuls and 40 Hockey Canada personnel. So a total of 80 folks are at Queens Place Amera Center starting their national team ID camp. It's really quite exciting to think about that Hockey Canada has brought their organization in a big way for many days to the region of Queens. Our businesses are going to benefit. Their personnel was identified yesterday, you know what, in a couple of businesses on Main Street that were open. Our businesses are going to benefit. White Point Beach Resort is the host for the ladies team. as they entertain ID camp here. Our businesses are going to benefit. A new business in our area recently, Hunts Point Market and Cafe, are catering this event for Hockey Canada at Queen's Place. I think it's just a tremendous example of what we're capable of in Queens. And how does Hockey Canada end up in Queens, in Queen's Place Ameri-Center, for a full week? A lot of it came by chance, but a lot of it came from a lot of background work done over years of time and an event resume that has been continued to be built. The facility alone is, you know, really near a turnkey operation at this point. It continues, there are some improvements ongoing, etc. And that in part was the attraction for those folks to come. So, you know, some of the desired outcomes of that Hockey Canada event that are here are, we're hopeful that they're investing in our community for a period of time. We're hopeful that someone catches the bug, perhaps a local citizen, steps up to the plate, wants to potentially bid on one of the many, many Hockey Canada events that are out there that potentially fits the size of the venue. And maybe because of this event, we're able to leverage a new event in the next couple of years for Queen's Place Ameri-Center and our community, all driven by local volunteers. And of course, we'd like Hockey Canada to come back on their own and run some more camps. So I'm sure the action is probably pretty exciting over there today. And just want to let you know, as you know, it's been a challenging week for everyone in the region of Queens and across Nova Scotia. But certainly, we expect folks will show up, take in some of the free practices, engage Jillian Sonia, Allison, Adam Monroe, and Blair Turnbull, our Nova Scotia representatives on the ID camp and team, and, you know, enjoy the festivities. We have students from across Queens as schools reopen and students are allowed. The students will be bused in, and probably about 800 students will be coming in over the next 3 days, starting tomorrow, to see some of the practices and cheer for Canada. This is sort of an aside to the presentation, but walking down the hallway to yesterday at Queen's Place and looking at all the posters of encouragement and stuff for the ladies team, I think really, you know, brings the spirit of events, you know, and what we do here in Queens. I mean, here we've just had basically a natural disaster, and yet we've had students and educators and Queens Minor Hockey and just people stepping up to be ready to host. And it's one of the things we're known best for, hosting across many, many events across the region. So with not particularly focusing on any particular event for any particular reason, but you know, our year started off in 2019 here, really, as you can see on the screen, as we entertained visitors from across the globe. We hosted the World Junior Curling Championships as a community at Queen's Place Ameri-Center. We had 100 athletes. We had as many World Curling Federation personnel. We had 6,000 bums in seats, over 21 draws and practices. This was an 8-day, 2-week event, and we'll contribute, you know, when the impact statements are finally released. We expect that the local impact in Liverpool will be approximately $700,000. Across the region of Queens will be $1 million, and it will probably come close to $2 million across the province. It drove accommodation rooms across Queens, excess of 1,000 nights. So definitely a good event for our accommodation industry. But here, you know, this just depicts that folks from Europe and across the world came to Queen's Place Ameri-Center, region of Queens, and got to view this amazing event. So certainly, you know, these events, any event in Queens takes place because of the great volunteers we have. So first and foremost, the volunteers that step up and wish to host an event. then the volunteers that come on board and execute events. And we execute small to large events in Queens. And it is truly all about our volunteers. This, you know, this picture certainly depicts a major event, and it was curling again. But, you know, we're decked out, we're ready, and we're ready to host. We've seen this time and time again as we welcome visitors and locals to, you know, the Hank Snow Tribute, the Memorial Car Show, for instance, Canadian Axe Throwing Championships, and, of course, our classic rock concert that was held in August. Privateer Days also has, you know, a major contingent of volunteers that execute, and the Queens County Fair. All of our events and festivals across Queens rely on the great volunteers that we have. So we've been crowning champions in our own backyard here, and this slide just depicts that Team Tardy Canada won the men's World Junior Curling Championships in February at Queen's Place. 2014, we had Mary Fay. She was crowned champion. And, you know, many, many local folks have excelled in their sport or their activity here in Queens. So our surrounding communities, you know, besides Liverpool, there's Caledonia, Greenfield, Milton, and Port Mayboy, just to name a few. And they always rally to show off their uniqueness and their capacity when it comes to hosting local events. So from Canada Day to Lighthouse Art Show to Queens County Fair and races at the Dragway, these are all major events that contribute to these outlying communities. This event in particular, the 2015 RCMP Musical Ride hosted at the fairgrounds, attracted near 1,500 folks into Caledonia and North Queens. So certainly everyone took ownership and made that event come to reality, and why can't we do more? Queens Place Amera Center, certainly the centerpiece of venues within the region. And, you know, we host conventions and major ice events, which include hockey and figure skating. We've hosted wonderful music concerts, trade shows, the Hank Snow Tribute. And it's simply the greatest advertisement that we have that we can leverage to sell ourselves to others in the province, across Canada, and across the world. Every time an event of major stature takes place at the facility, we're able to engage mass advertising that helps get the word out about Liverpool and area, the facility, and the region. So we've hosted legendary acts on your stage. You know, but you think back to 2013, Travis Tritt came in, and then in 2014 we had Charlie Pride come in. So those folks were brought in through promoters, and so what took place after that, we became our own promoter in the region of Queens, as we began with Blue Rodeo in 2015, headed into the Beach Boys, and most recently with our classic rock concert on August 25th with Honeymoon Suite. Queens Place Amera Center and other venues across Queens are a great opportunity to promote local talent. This is one that certainly comes to mind and sticks in memory. June 15th, 2018, just over a year ago, hard to imagine, seems so long ago, you know, we had young Autumn Carver take the stage with Washboard Union at that successful Washboard Union concert and brought the roof down at Queen's Place. I think it truly was one of the pinnacle moments for us locally from a center perspective. And so I think overall, in general, in Queens, we do host events that inspire people. This is just a, this is a wonderful photo of the building during the Brett Kissel show. You can see this repeated from small venues to large venues across Queens as people become engaged in what events are going on. And any of you in the crowd there? No?
Yep, wrong picture.
Wrong picture.
Should have checked if I could supply with some great ones.
Well, there was some great energy at that show. So in general, you know, we'll sort of get to a review a bit about the outline of what we're looking for event execution strategy. And certainly have sort of pointed out that, you know, we have many venues across the region of Queens. We certainly have Queens Place Amer Center as a pinnacle. We have the fairgrounds. We have the dragway. We have waterfront areas and rivers and lakes that events can be performed at. And we have small community halls and medium-sized community halls, et cetera. And it takes volunteers. It takes volunteers to start the events, to host the events, staff the events, and make them happen. It's really important, I guess, to note, and note at this point too, that, you know, events have to have value locally, be it from a business perspective or citizens' perspective. Because the citizen foots the bill in the end if it goes south. So, you know, we need a strong base of local citizens engaging and purchasing tickets and attending events in order to move forward so we can get in the attraction business and bring those unique visitors that bring us over the top and bring us into new areas of event execution. So Liverpool, we made a statement. Liverpool is recognized as a prime event hosting destination. Now, some of the objectives of that are in that we are looking to leverage and create economic impacts. You know, it could be business, could be. Also, we're looking to execute and deliver social impacts to our community and our citizens. And we're looking to use our facilities to our max. Some of the actions that that can be taken to solidify the strategy are reports. So we need to have good reporting systems so we can analyze and develop a way to move forward and evaluate what we can do. We need to have great event service delivery, and that is from our smallest events to our largest events. So we need to educate and work with our business community, citizens, and employees of business to ensure their hosting capabilities, infrastructure, and other pieces of delivery are delivered to host. And we need to be adept and ready to promote and market ourselves. What we're looking for within the strategy would be to start implementation of a strategy in January 2020 and have the core pieces completed in March 2022. Strategy would be aligned to Nova Scotia Event Strategy and the Culture Action Plan and likely consist of 5-6 pillars with a litany of actions within with timelines for completion. So overall strategy must be fluid and reassessed as often as necessary. If we write it in stone, we're likely to fail. But if we realize that we can pivot, change, and adapt as we go, that will certainly be a bonus. So one thing about events, they elevate and inspire our people, ourselves and our people. We look for events that create emotional attachments. So whether we're hosting a provincial baseball tournament or a Hank Snow tribute or a musical ride or a rock concert, we are looking for always, an event organizer is looking for a hook to have people buy in, show up, participate, enjoy, and benefit from. So events overall act as a catalyst to attract visitors. So that attraction, obviously the event starts with the base of folks locally that allow us to move forward with a particular event. And then that puts us into an advertisement and reach out mode where we can attract new unique visitors to the area. And events can bring new money and population, so they create such an opportunity when we're able to, as a region, promote ourselves and through social media, through television, through newspaper, and et cetera. And people look at events as an attraction piece, and it does encourage people to move to particular areas. So quality of life, very, very important. So what are our challenges? So really we're sort of brandless at this point, I guess. So what are we selling overall? So like premier event attractors and communities, they're leveraging and selling their brand to potential rights holders and promoters. And we potentially, right now we have no brand. So we're gonna propose that a new brand could be Events Liverpool. It's identifiable to sellers, to buyers, and to visitors. It creates a destination point. We're challenged within community and business engagement. So, you know, it's true that business supports events. They want events. They are not necessarily hung up on the fact that did it benefit my business, because they know overall there's a benefit to the majority. And that is really good feedback to have received. And, you know, our accommodation sector, they look at it, some, you know, one night events aren't as lucrative or bed-filling as multi-night events, but overall our accommodation operators, they look forward to the major events, and other events, they'll certainly take them. So different accommodation operators benefit to a different way. Our demographics is certainly a challenge. Our median age of 49, one of the oldest in the province, and you know, so we can decide, do we tailor event offers to our aging population, or do we look to engage more youthful events at particular points? So every event has a particular target market. What will we invest in? So disengagement. So there's somewhat of a lack of understanding in regards to event acquisition out there. There is a pool of thought that some folks believe that we are the acquirer. As the Region of Queens, we are the investor and we are the executor, when in fact we want to be the enabler, contribute in ways to assist, but the onus be put on bid event rights holders and volunteers to execute. We also need to work on employee education, business education, to enhance our hosting and welcoming capabilities. We need to raise that level. Certainly the number one priority for business is sales and profit. But we need folks to be aware of events and what they can do and participate in promoting them. And a learning curve. So at what cost do we do our own Region of Queens events? You know, our last was one taxpayer in the Region of Queens. A number of other municipalities in around Nova Scotia have multiple units that are contributing to particular events and infrastructure, etc. Over our last two music events, for instance, you know, we've assumed a loss of approximately $36,000 right now. So we win sometimes and we lose other times, But, you know, we have to determine at what cost do we do these events. One thing about the learning curve right now, too, I just mentioned while we were talking about one taxpayer and a loss and that type of thing, is there's basically a saturation in the marketplace out there, certainly regarding the music end. So, you know, we have to look at, you know, what costs we're going to do these events. That leads back to, you know, the local buy-in for sure, and then our ability to attract beyond local. Because we quite frankly need beyond local in order to be successful. So limiting our potential. So do we move forward aggressively and strategically? Do we raise the bar now? And to be a prime destination, we have that momentum. We need, you know, are we going to be bold and stay in front of our competitors? We need to be creative and exceptional, relentless and strategic. Same old ways will not produce results, and we do not want to put the taxpayer at risk. So potential new models could include new collaborations, new contracted services, could include retooling of human resources here within the region, and onwards. And our major event infrastructure. So we are limited in particular ways in particular communities, so we need to decide what the strategic investments will be across Queens and for new infrastructure that is required to host events. Did mention the Queens Place Mirror Center continues, year over year, to have those minor improvements that help them become a turnkey operation and more attractive to potential renters. So strategy is a dream of what we can be, and without one, we are directionless. So what's achievable and relevant to Queens? You know, we can continue with the Community Investment Fund as is. We can go back to the days of trying to rent Queens Place and Mirror Center, basically, and no longer host major event activity. And we can seek, or we can continue to seek high-level events for others to latch, to hitch their wagon to, as events rights holders within the community, so we can assist them in hosting events. So some of our considerations, we need to, you know, consider how we will partner on infrastructure that's required for hosting. Do we increase our focus outside of Liverpool Core, increase our support outside Liverpool Core, and remove some of the duplication? And just an example of that would be, you know, we host Privateer Days at the end of June. Then we turn Queens Place and Mirror Center for 4 hours into a Canada Day celebration. Yet we have, you know, folks in our outlying communities in Milton and Caledonia who would certainly welcome more folks from the Liverpool area traveling into their communities to assist them. So that's one part of duplication that we have going on right now. We have to ask ourselves that question. Do we continue to do things like Canada Day in Liverpool? Right now, we choose not to implement accommodation levy. Do we contract potential new event ideas and services out among potential suitors within the community or outside our community? So potential ideas could be hosting concert series on the waterfront in Liverpool at a soundstage. You know, do we budget $40,000 for someone to execute that for a month in the summer, that type of thing? Do we contract those types of special event ideas into our outlying communities such as Caledonia area? And we can create a special event advisory committee to help collect data and assess data and look at the results of what our event results are as we perform them. Ultimately, if we're going to raise the bar, make substantial investments, and create an entity, basically, we need financial and human resources. So that's something to be thought about. So overall, we're proposing Events Liverpool Event Tourism Strategy, so an acronym would be LETS, basically with the vision of Liverpool's recognized as a prime event destination in Nova Scotia, with a mission to provide exceptional social experiences to local residents and unique visitors that drive economic benefits locally through the provision of opportunities for sport, culture, arts, community development, and volunteer experiences, supported with required infrastructure and venue capacity, and a value and core values of we provide exceptional service and experiences, be focused on exceptional standards for venue delivery, and be stakeholder driven through continuous improvement, reliant on stakeholder feedback. So there's a lot in the document that you received, so if you have some questions, perhaps we can roll through some questions, dig in.
Councilors have any questions or comments? Who would like to go first? Councilor Frivolous.
I'll go first. Many things in this report I absolutely agree with. I think there's a way to move forward, and I think we've captured a lot of this in the report. I do have some questions about what it looks like when we get there. First I want to say that, you know, hospitality should be our number one goal. We have done this for a very long time. We have people returning. I just met with a friend last week who returned from the UK after being here at the theater festival. He's not coming back for theater festival. He's coming back because the hospitality that was shown while he was here. I have friends from the junior curling who have been here 5 times. They're not back here because of curling hospitality. So those are the things that we can do that doesn't cost a lot of money, mm-hmm. if any money at all, to really have people remember Liverpool. And we do a great job of it, but it should be one of the top priorities, because we can all do that in so many different ways, not even events, but so let's not forget that part. But I'm thinking of things